Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me. As I take you with me to Australia, where preparations are underway for a less imminent but perhaps more international event Pope Benedict XVI will travel far to attend. You may just have guessed, it's World Youth Day, which will take place in Sydney from the 15th to the 20th of July. Only a few months away, Australians are gearing up for this event, which involves, well, let's hear from the Archbishop of Canberra and Goulburn, Mark Coleridge, whom I sat down with in our studios recently. Young Catholics in Australia preparing for the World Youth Day events?
The question's a very good one. How are they preparing? I can say that they're preparing with extraordinary intensity. When I look at the resources and the energy that are going into the preparations for World Youth Day, I think to myself often enough, something good has to come out of this. And it's already happening, even in the preparation in Australia. Now, new energies and possibilities are being generated. So that's exciting.
It appeals to young people.
Well, it does. And I'm not saying that it appeals to all young people. There's no magic bullet. When I hear people talk about World Youth Day in Australia sometimes, it's as if they think it's the magic bullet that's going to solve all our problems. Now, it's not. But World Youth Day is, again, a much more complex thing than meets the eye as an overall strategy. First of all, the name is a bit misleading. It's not just for young people. And it's not just a day either. It's a very long process that for us in Australia, we talk about a pilgrimage that began long ago and will continue long beyond the celebrations in Sydney in July of this year. We talk about 20 years beyond World Youth. So it's a long, complex pilgrimage that involves all kinds of preparation. And it's really that process of pilgrimage that generates the kind of energies that the church needs and I think that society needs. See, John Paul II... when he established World Youth Day, I think had some profound insights. I think he knew the power of pilgrimage, perhaps from his Polish background with Częstochowa and so on. But he understood that. He understood the power of the crowd and the way it could open people to a new experience of the church. He had an instinctive sense of the crowd anyway. But I think he could sense that draw the young into this great crowd of people and they would see the bigness of the church. When often people see a shrunken church and they experience one tiny little part of the church and they think that's all there is. So to understand the power of pilgrimage and the power of the crowd, but then also to understand, as he did, I think, the power of the young. Because I think one of his insights was that we're in a time when the Holy Spirit has sprung a surprise on us. And that is that the young are being called to lead the whole church. Now, we talk about the young as the church of the future. I think one of the things John Paul II was saying was, you're not just the church of the future, you're the church of now. So that, like the prophet Jeremiah, the young are being called before their time, and when they might feel unready, and when others would judge them to be unready, to lead the church into new territory. None of us knows exactly what the new territory is, but the young are among the leadership group, leading the whole community of the church into the new territory that God has in mind. So I think to have understood that is a truly prophetic thing, the power of not only the pilgrimage and the crowd, but the power of the young. And I can see that in Australia now. The young are leading in ways that really surprises them at times and certainly surprises oldies like me. But
when you say the young are leading, they have innovative ways of leading?
Well, I think they're not burdened in the way that my generation at least can be. See, my generation grew up in those heady years immediately after the Second Vatican Council. And it was an exhilarating time with an exhilarating agenda. Looking back, some of our expectations were naive and they haven't been fulfilled. And there can be a sense almost of disillusionment, certainly of disappointment, that somehow the council hasn't quite delivered the brave new church that we expected. But it may well be that our expectations were misplaced or wrong at times. Now, the young aren't burdened with all of that past, that they have a sense of freshness, an openness to all kinds of aspects of religious experience that my generation perhaps find more difficult. An openness to the infinite attractiveness of the person of Jesus Christ. I find myself in the diocese, I have to say, at times when things weigh on me, as they do with bishops from time to time, that very often it's my contact with young people that refreshes me at the deeper level. And that's what I mean by leadership. Because a lot of leadership is about morale and generating hope, a sense of the future. And almost despite themselves, and often unconsciously, the young people do that. They do it to me. I think they are showing signs of doing that to the church as a whole. That's what I hope from World Youth Day.
Would you say that the Catholics in Australia are far removed from Rome, as it were? Geographically,
there is a sense of that. And the fact is, Australia is a very large country, but it's an island. And it's not only the fact of distance, it's the fact of insularity. The combination of great distance and insularity, I think, does create a sense of separatism or separateness. So there is a sense that we do our own thing. Now, there's a good side to that, a sense of initiative and energy. There's also a dark side to it, because the danger is that we go our own way and we say that the universal church doesn't matter. One of the things I find, again, in my own diocese, is that, and given my own experience of the universal church, I keep reminding them that we are the Catholic Church. We're not the Aussie Church, and we're not just the Canberra Church. We happen to be part of the Catholic Church. So that, for instance, one of the things I've been saying is we need priests. Therefore, we have a twofold strategy. The first part of it is we will work as hard as we can to generate interest in priestly vocations locally. But then we will also bring priests from overseas, the right kind of priests, obviously, with all the usual conditions, because that's part of what being Catholic means, sharing of resources. We don't have abundant vocations. Other parts of the world do. So we need to feed off the riches of other churches, and we are. And also with World Youth Day, the fact that you've got all these people coming from around the world onto our big island is going to be an enormous enrichment and an experience of the universal church, the fact that the Holy Father's going to be there. I mean, the power of the Pope's presence is unmistakable as an experience of the universal church. And at a time when so many people are feeling so isolated, that sense of vast connectedness that the Catholic Church can provide, I think, is a very precious and powerful thing.
Do you have any particular role models in Australia in terms of, you know, in terms of saints or whoever? Are they Australian or are they...
Well, we only have one Beata Mary MacKillop, who is an extraordinary woman. But I suspect that sanctity, when it really takes root in Australia, will look a bit different than it's looked elsewhere, like most things. The Antipodes are a strange place. Nothing is as others expect. When the first Europeans came to Australia, they couldn't believe that the seasons were the other way round. I mean, we have Christmas in summer and Easter in autumn. They couldn't believe that you had trees that shed their bark and kept their leaves. Trees were supposed to shed their leaves and keep their bark. Now, all of that's to say that when sanctity really takes root and flowers in Australia, I think the saints will look different, and perhaps they do even now. When the first Europeans tried to paint a kangaroo, all they could paint was a big rat. They couldn't see the kangaroo because it was so different. And you can, if you look at early Australian art, European art, you can see them gradually acquiring an eye that actually sees what's there in front of them. Now, I think it's the same with saints. Mary MacKillop unquestionably is a saint. But in a sense, she's still in a somewhat European mould. Her parents were Scottish born. She was born in Melbourne herself. But what she did was uniquely Aussie. Mary MacKillop saw that there were all these kids, Catholic kids, out in the outback, the bush, the never-never. And they were getting no education in their faith or anything else. Mary MacKillop founds this order of teaching sisters who go out into these, what must have been, hell holes, and lived a life of extreme poverty in very, very harsh conditions in order to teach these kids. I mean, the heroism of it is astonishing. So Mary, in that sense, is as Aussie as a gum tree. But in another sense, she's still in that twilight zone as Europe really feels itself at home in Australia. Now, who are the saints today? I don't know who they are. I hope among the young people. I mean, John Paul II, he used to ask this question, you know, also he didn't ask the question, he made the statement, you are the saints of the third millennium.
Well, it's role models because it's such an innovative society. They need a new role model, perhaps.
They do. And very often the kinds of people that Australians respect, apart from sports people, tend to be secular saints. You know, doctors who run off and spend their lives helping...
Flying doctors.
All that sort of thing. But Australians are suspicious of religion if it doesn't do good things. In other words, that they'll say things like, well, don't give me all that religious junk, you know, all that doctrine and stuff.
They're pragmatic.
Yeah, very pragmatic. Give me the Salvation Army rattling their tin and going off and feeding the poor. Now, mind you, the Catholic Church feeds a lot more poor than the Salvation Army. Nothing wrong with the salvos. But there is a very, very pragmatic streak in Australian Christianity and Catholicism. But I think there is also, not far beneath the surface, a kind of mystical impulse that's not always easy to recognise, because, again, it's an antipodean thing. Now, I hope that there will be a new flowering of the mystical, the contemplative. Again, I say this endlessly in my own part of the world, echoing John Paul II, that we need a new contemplation for a new mission. And the church in Australia is a young church in many ways, but it's a young church that's grown old quickly. It's a bit like cloning Dolly the sheep. You know, Dolly the sheep grew old quickly because she'd been cloned. You know, she inherited the age of her mother or progenitor, whatever it is. Now, the Australian church can be like that. We've only been there a bit more than 200 years, but we've acquired the old age diseases of the old world. So we're no less in need of a new evangelisation than any other part of the world, even though we're young. And the new evangelisation, I think John Paul II was spot on, it can only come if there is a new depth of contemplation that produces a new outreach of mission.
The Divine Mercy devotion is strong in Australia, isn't it?
Well, it is. And that's another aspect of this resurgent popular religiosity that puzzles many people. If you look at the Divine Mercy devotion, which goes back to the mystical experience of St. Faustina Kowalska.
In Poland,
yeah. Really, it seems to me to be a latter-day version of the devotion of the Sacred Heart that went back to the mystical experience of St. Margaret Mary Alacoque in France. So that it's something both new and old, and that there's a lot of that sort of thing going on. Or the resurgent Marian devotion, too, of a place like Medjugorje, takes its place within a much deeper and older stream of Catholic devotion that looks back to Lourdes and beyond that. So that, again, look, it's not a matter of choosing between the new and the old. That was perhaps one of the mistakes we made in those years immediately after the Second Vatican Council. I say to people in Canberra, look, at the end of my years there, however few or many they might be, I would like to leave a church that is both more traditional and more contemporary. And I think that's the kind of recipe that we're looking for.
A big thank you there to the Archbishop of Canberra and Goulburn, Mark Coleridge, for filling us in on preparations for July's World Youth Day in Sydney, Australia. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.